Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Muslim Cool, Race, Religion, and Hip-Hop in the United States by Suad Abdul Kabir, narrated by Jair Bush. Introduction. Esperanza. Stuff is kind of mashed up, and now Arab and South Asian U.S. American sisters are wanting to dress like the U.S. Black American sisters they see on stage. It's girls that are probably first generation here, trying to find the aesthetic that fits them that is not their mother's or from their mother's land, which I can sort of understand since I come from an immigrant Dominican background. But what happens is that they start picking from the people that are around them, like the magazine White Culture. And then they want to add an urban element because it's a cool thing. Cool to be from an urban environment, right? Suad, what is urban? Is that a euphemism? Esperanza, I don't even know what it is. You want to wear cargo pants? See, I have a camouflage scarf. I've worn it only once because this Pakistani girl walked up to me like, this is so cool. And I was like, to myself, I can't even pretend like that's okay with me. And it's a girl that I love. Now, I want to back this up by saying, I have been wearing camouflage my whole life. I'm the camouflage queen. I wear it a lot because I like it, but also I feel like I can. It's appropriate for me to wear it because my brother was in war, people. Like, geez, this is my actual surname on my jacket. Anyway, so this sister comes just really sincerely. I really like your scarf. Where can I get it from? And I was kind of like, thank you. But I don't know really what else to say. It's a compliment, but in another way, it's really a thievery because we don't have much, right? Like, where does culture come from? It comes from people who don't have much. That's where hip hop comes from. That's where house music came from. That's where tying your hair up in a scarf, wearing fatigues, because you ain't got no other clothes, right? So you got to make do with what you have. And when someone is taking that, you don't have anything left because you don't have much to begin with. You going home to your mansions. How many mansions did I visit in the last week, right? You going home to silverware that's really silver, but you taking my scarf? Just let me have something. And I get it. You can't really tell people what they can put on their body. I get that. But there is a certain level you can at least give due to where it's done and at least try to do it authentically yourself. You have to know your boundaries and give knowledge and respect. Esperanza is a single mother in her early 30s. She is a multimedia artist who loves to teach, but also teaches to pay the bills. I met up with her at her home in Humboldt Park in Chicago, and after she let her kids know we handling important business here, we lounged and she shared her reflections on being raced, gendered, classed, and Muslim. Although Esperanza is a convert to Islam and was born and raised in Chicago, and I was born to Muslim parents and raised in Brooklyn, we hit it off right away. This was because of the other things we had in common. Latinidad, being part of the hip-hop generation and having intimate knowledge of the joys and the frustrations of growing up working class in the hood. Indeed, our respective experiences of race, class, and gender as Muslim women were often parallel. I had seen Esperanza at hip-hop cultural events around the city, always observing folks, as artists are apt to do, before we formally met at an event at the Inner City Muslim Action Network, IMAN. IMAN is a Muslim-run nonprofit that provides services, community organizing, and arts-based activism on the southwest side of Chicago. IMAN was a key site for me in the field, just as it was a place of central importance for many of my interlocutors, who I refer to as my teachers because I drew on their generous sharing of their knowledge and experiences. These teachers, such as Esperanza, are the progenitors of a discourse, an epistemology, an aesthetic, and an embodiment that I call Muslim Cool. Forged at the intersection of Islam and hip-hop, Muslim Cool is a way of being Muslim that draws on blackness to contest two overlapping systems of racial norms, the hegemonic ethno-religious norms of Arab and South Asian U.S.-American Muslim communities on the one hand, and white American normativity on the other. For my teachers, U.S. Black, Latina spelled with an at symbol, Arab and South Asian American Muslims engaged in hip-hop-based activism, Iman was a place where their intersecting identities, often rendered invisible by these hegemonic racial and religious norms, were visible and valid. Esperanza. When it first started, I was so excited to find Iman. I was excited mostly because I came from an artist background and I came from a church background, and since I became Muslim, I never found that type of community and that type of outlet. Progress Theater was the first group I saw, and I literally cried. I had no idea Muslims could even do this. I was like freaking out. I mean, I didn't just go to church. I was in church. It was for real. It was like people in the aisles jumping up and down, so it just made me happy. When Esperanza saw Progress Theater perform at Iman, she saw herself. The specific event was Community Cafe, which showcased performers who were generally Muslim, usually extremely talented, and predominantly working with hip-hop and a sonic landscape that was charged with blackness as a radical political perspective and expressive culture. Although not a hip-hop group, Progress Theater, an ensemble founded by two U.S. Black Muslim women, fit right in. Its storytelling exhibited a Black feminist aesthetic, and its performances, which mixed theater, poetry, and song, were deeply grounded in Black expressive cultures, particularly those of the U.S. South. The ethno-religious hegemonies of Arab and South Asian U.S.-American communities would prescribe that Muslims could not do that. They could not engage Black expressive cultures as Muslims. Yet, with Progress Theater and at Iman, Esperanza found the opposite was true. They could and they did. Iman is a site of Muslim Cool because it privileged Blackness as a politics and as an expressive culture of resistance, and did so with a diverse constituency. Like my teachers, Iman's events and work include Muslims as well as non-Muslims who are U.S. Black, Latin, Arab, and South Asian American from a range of socioeconomic backgrounds. Accordingly, race and class tensions are also part of Muslim Cool, and Esperanza's subsequent experiences of cultural appropriation dampened her initial euphoria. Iman, as a Muslim space, was affirming for Esperanza, but it was also a source of frustration. Esperanza wore camouflage because she liked it, but also because racialized systemic inequalities had shut her family out of economic opportunity and shuttled her brother into the service. In contrast, the Pakistani girl who thought the camouflage was cool had access to a set of class-based and cultural privileges. She was educated and suburban and had more cultural authenticity as a Muslim. Accordingly, the Pakistani girl's potential appropriation of camouflage was embedded in unequal power relations. Esperanza loved the girl, and the girl loved her scarf, but, as Esperanza put it, all that love was fraught, no matter how much Islam we have in common. The camouflage-loving Pakistani girl was not merely a cultural interloper. She was also a racialized and gendered Muslim subject navigating her identity at the crossroads of hip-hop and Islam. The Pakistani girl in Esperanza's story reminded me of Rabia, a young Pakistani U.S.-American woman who was one of my key teachers in the field. I could imagine Rabia admiring Esperanza's scarf with the same kind of unbridled enthusiasm, but in contrast to the first Pakistani girl, Rabia was an activist who worked in Inglewood, a predominantly black neighborhood in Chicago. I asked Esperanza whether this made a difference. Suad, is there a difference, you think, with Rabia? Esperanza, it is a really weird balance because a lot of these sisters are darker than me, are darker than my children, but they have such a suburban white mentality, and they are trying to figure out the crossroads. But yeah, there is a difference for Rabia. Now that she's going to work in Inglewood every day, she is not as naive about the struggle, but she had to fight for that, and she is still fighting for it because she is still that educated Pakistani girl from the suburbs at the end of the day. But it's the same on the other end. I could never really escape this, no matter how much Islam we have in common. Even if I escaped this, even if I married a Pakistani man, even if I married Muslim and I married up and got real silverware, right? That camouflage would still be mine. For Esperanza, Rabia was different because the struggle was not just a fashion accessory for her. However, she noted insightfully that this did not mean that Rabia, she, or any of us could escape the complex realities of race, identity, and power in the fight to contest hegemonies and overcome inequality. This insight is critical to understanding Muslim cool. At the meeting of Islam and hip-hop, intersecting notions of Muslimness and blackness challenge and reconstitute the racial order of the United States. I developed the concept of Muslim cool through my long-term ethnographic research with young multi-ethnic Muslims, primarily in Chicago, Illinois. I argue that by establishing connections to specific notions of blackness, my teachers configure a sense of U.S.-American Muslim identity that stands as a counterpoint to the hegemonic norms of whiteness, as well as to Arab and South Asian U.S.-American communities. These connections are critical and contested interventions. Critical because they push back against the pervasive phenomenon of anti-blackness, and contested because questions of race, class, gender, and nationality complicate and trouble Muslim cool's relationship to black identities and cultures. I make three central arguments in this book. First, I argue that blackness is central to the histories, engagements, entanglements, and experiences of U.S.-American Islam. The term blackness, in my work, refers both to the histories, traditions, and customs of black peoples and to the circulating ideas and beliefs about people of African descent. My rendering of blackness is diasporic and polycultural, and as such, conceptualizes blackness as culture and discourse, which relies on and exceeds the body, black and otherwise. I contend that blackness shapes the individual Muslim experience in the United States and inter-ethnic Muslim relationships, as well as the terms of U.S. Muslim engagement with the state. Second, I make a case for the continuing significance of race and blackness in the contemporary United States. The book focuses on inter-minority relationships to articulate a narrative of race and racism in the United States that transcends the black-white binary, but also the fallacy of post-racialism, which holds that racism, particularly anti-black racism, is over, and that any talk of race is actually counterproductive to the work of anti-racism. I identify the ways in which race, and specifically blackness, is marshaled in the work of anti-racism. For Muslim cool blackness is a point of opposition to white supremacy that creates solidarities among differently racialized and marginalized groups in order to dismantle overarching racial hierarchies. Yet, as the stories in this book illustrate, these solidarities are necessarily entangled in the contradictions inherent in blackness as something that is both desired and devalued. The engagement with blackness by young U.S. Muslims, black and non-black, is informed by long-standing discourses of anti-blackness, as well as the more current co-optation of blackness in the narratives of U.S. multiculturalism and American exceptionalism. Accordingly, my third central argument is that any analysis of contemporary blackness must contend both with the ways in which it is used to resist the logics of white supremacy and with its complicity in that supremacy. A light-skinned Latina, Esperanza, hesitated to consider herself black. She explained by example, "I didn't grow up eating those foods. I had to learn how to make macaroni and cheese as an adult." Nevertheless, Progress Theater's performance was still deeply meaningful to her. This was because black expressive cultures, both U.S.-based and in the broader African diaspora, shaped her own experiences as a Latina who did not know how to make macaroni and cheese, but who grew up on ecstatic evangelical church culture as well as house music and hip-hop. Esperanza's macaroni and cheese learning curve is reflective of the Chicago context in which black is defined as having roots in the U.S. South. However, blackness in the discourse and practice of Muslim cool, and as I use the term in this book, is not limited to black traditions originating in the continental United States. For example, as I describe in Chapter 2, my teachers contest claims that music is haram, forbidden, by placing hip-hop in an Afro-diasporic Islamic genealogy. This genealogy is constructed through historic Africa and its transatlantic diaspora to assert the religious permissibility of black music. Likewise, the style of head rapping that I describe in Chapter 3 is a practice found outside the United States. Yet, Muslim cool's relationship to place, specifically the United States, is not inconsequential. When multi-ethnic U.S. American Muslim women take up the Afro-diasporic head rap tradition, this practice must also be interpreted with attention to the specificities of blackness in the United States. Similarly, when U.S. Muslim hip-hop artists travel abroad on the state-sponsored cultural diplomacy trips described in Chapter 5, blackness is entangled in its relationship to U.S. empire. Accordingly, the blackness engaged in Muslim cool is diasporic, linked to the particulars of the black experience in the United States, as well as to questions of black culture and politics that are in the conversation with those of other blacks elsewhere, particularly in other parts of the Americas. Muslim cool is a way of thinking and a way of being Muslim that resists and reconstitutes U.S. racial hierarchies. This push and pull at the core of Muslim cool is grounded in its relationship to hip-hop. Hip-hop, as an artistic form, expressed in DJing, MCing, dance, and graffiti, and as a form of knowledge and cultural production, from ideas and language to fashion and style, is a site of critical contradiction and contestation. Perceptions of hip-hop music and culture range wildly. Hip-hop is seen variously as deeply mass-mediated and commodified, and as a quintessential example of an expressive culture of resistance. The hip-hop wars in the mainstream media and within the hip-hop community reflect this kind of binary framework, with each side claiming to know what hip-hop really is. However, hip-hop is a traded commodity and an oppositional culture at the same time. Hip-hop epitomizes what Stuart Hall described as the contradictory nature of Black popular culture. It is simultaneously rooted in the lived experience of the African diaspora and appropriated in ways that are unrecognizable to that lived experience. Importantly, my claim for hip-hop's rootedness in the African diaspora is not a move to mark hip-hop as Black in an essentializing way that erases, most specifically, the Latinas, Black and non-Black, who were central to hip-hop's development. Rather, it acknowledges hip-hop's grounding in a diasporic and polycultural Blackness, in which Latinidad is always an interlocutor, if not a participant, forged by involuntary and subsequent migrations, and manifest in the aesthetics privileged in the music and culture. Moreover, the contestation identified by Hall is not unique to Black popular culture, but it is a defining characteristic of the mass production of Blackness. The proliferation of Black expressive forms devalues Black life as often as it celebrates it. The contradictions and contestations of hip-hop are often depicted through the homonyms roots, R-O-O-T-S, and roots, R-O-U-T-E-S. Hip-hop is rooted in Afro-diasporic expressive cultures and has traveled on roots far beyond its origins. To the pair of roots and roots, I add the loop. I take loop from the hip-hop sampling technique in which a selected piece of music is looped to play over and over as part of the creation of a new piece of music, whereas roots and roots extend and splinter into multiple pathways. The loop extends and returns, not in a closure, but in a cipher, the communal and competitive space in which hip-hop culture regenerates and develops. The loop is a metaphor for the linkages between Islam, hip-hop, and Blackness in the 21st century that create Muslim cool. Islam, as practiced in U.S. Black American communities, shaped hip-hop, which in turn shapes young 21st century Black and non-Black U.S. Muslims who return to Blackness and Islam as a way of thinking and a way of being Muslim. As Muslim cool, like a looped musical sample defined by sonic repetition and variation, Muslim cool is a site of critical continuity and change. My mic sounds nice. Interventions. This book is an intervention in several existing literatures. Anthropological research has a long history of studying Muslim communities. The Muslim body, as well as Black and Black Muslim bodies, has served as material and conceptual territory, as labor, and as a specimen for the construction of Euro-American colonial projects, projects that made and were made by anthropology. Today, the anthropology of Islam has moved away from a primarily Orientalist narrative and attempts to offer more complex pictures of Muslim life. This is a critical challenge to the post-9/11 narrative of the Muslim as singularly backward and barbaric. However, although this work is important, much of it continues to focus on Muslims outside the United States and Europe, and this disciplinary emphasis on non-Western Muslims has an unintended effect. It reproduces the notion of Muslim as other, which ends up reifying the static notions of us versus them that this research intends to undo. These unintended consequences also resonate outside anthropology. Early scholarship on Islam in the United States told a diaspora narrative in which Muslims immigrated from an Islamic homeland to the West. The narrative centered on a bicultural clash between American and Muslim identities. Muslims were seen as analogous to other ethnic immigrants who faced the challenges of integration and assimilation into the white American mainstream. This ethnicity assimilation paradigm not only marginalizes non-immigrants, replicating internal ethno-religious hegemonies, but it can also elide the distinctions between different groups of immigrants. Moreover, it locates Blackness and critical race studies at the fringes of the study of U.S. American Islam. In the field of hip-hop studies, scholars have tended to study hip-hop as a text. The most common methodologies include lyric analysis, critical examinations of representation, and hip-hop as a discourse linked to narratives of race, class, gender, and sexuality under material conditions of inequality. The contributions these studies have made are significant and unquestionable, yet, as others have noted, they have left a critical area of inquiry underexplored. When researchers venture outside studios, stages, and street corner ciphers to different sites of inquiry, such as family rooms and friendships, what does hip-hop look like there? This question can be extended to the site of religion, which has also, until recently, received inadequate attention within hip-hop scholarship. The social, cultural, economic, and political landscape of 1970s New York City and the expressive cultures of the African diaspora are common themes in retellings of hip-hop's birth story. Yet, these histories typically fail to account sufficiently for questions of faith, ethics, and spirituality in hip-hop's birth narrative. Building on earlier work, a new body of research is emerging around these questions. This scholarship successfully challenges narrow notions of religion and spirituality that would disqualify the religious in hip-hop, but is yet to fully attend to Islam's theoretical significance to the ways in which hip-hop music and culture engage religion and spirituality. In response to all these trends, Muslim Cool is an ethnographic study of Muslim life within the United States. It identifies the U.S. American Muslim experience as entangled in the workings of race, religion, and gender in the contemporary United States. It avoids reifying Islam-West dichotomies because it does not cast Muslims as peripheral or as outsiders who navigate assimilation, but rather as actors whose lives and experiences are critical to the production and reproduction of the contemporary United States and the West more broadly. Further, while the ethnicity assimilation paradigm continues to dominate some interdisciplinary approaches to the study of Muslims in the United States, this book joins a parallel body of scholarship in the study of Islam in U.S. America that pushes back against this tendency. Like other contributions to this body of work, Muslim Cool offers an analysis that sees questions of race and Blackness as central to the U.S. American Muslim narrative. Muslim Cool is a study of the relationship between race, religion, and popular culture. It also joins a growing body of work that has begun to explore Islam's relationship to hip-hop in the United States. These scholarly and artistic contributions analyze the role of Islamic theologies in the development of hip-hop, along with examining the role of hip-hop in individual pathways toward conversion to Islam. Like these studies, Muslim Cool traces the ways religious identity is constructed through hip-hop, but it also documents the particular epistemological impact of Islam and Muslim practice on hip-hop music and culture. This impact, I contend, was fundamental to the development of hip-hop ethics and activism. Muslim Cool advances hip-hop scholarship by bringing ethnography to hip-hop research, which has historically privileged textual analysis, and explores the hip-hop narratives of young men and women in a genre that typically privileges males. People's Instinctive Travels and Paths of Rhythm Muslims in Chicago and the United States. Precise demographics about Chicago's Muslim community are scarce. The most extensive survey was done in 1997 by East West University. This report estimated the total Muslim population of Chicago.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?